Well, I wanted to say that to relieve your minds that the sophistication of this talk is not going to be in the same solar system as the last two. So it'll be very simple and elementary, which doesn't necessarily mean easy, but it doesn't involve any machinery. What it does involve is this weird concept that didn't seem to fit anywhere except on the front page. And so the question is, this is a kind of obvious thing to look at. And the question is, can you produce things, results about this that are similar to results you can do about hyperplanes? Well, that's a pretty broad question, and I'm going to jump around a little bit here. Let's jump ahead to this Formula 1, which is the number of regions. So let's suppose that you have this A. It's a hyperplane arrangement. It doesn't really matter whether it's an affine arrangement or a homogeneous arrangement. And there's this formula for the number of regions in terms of the intersection lattice of the hyperplane arrangement. So the question is, how far can you generalize this formula? That's something I've been thinking about for, I'm going to have to tell you that some of you are younger than this, 35 years, and I don't think that I really know the answer, but this is an attempt to get an answer which occurred to me as I was wondering what problem to present a few years ago at a conference. That was immediately after the problem session was over. So it wasn't terribly urgent, so I told it to David Forge, who came up with a beginning of an answer, and we worked on this for a while. Well, so we start with this concept of a topological hyperplane, and that's a very simple thing in itself. So the important thing is how you put them together. And in order to put them together in a nice way, well, let's see what we have here. So we're going to start with a finite set of topoplanes, and we'll have an intersection semilattice. It's partially ordered in the usual way, reverse inclusion, and what I'll call a flat, which is a really horrible name for something that's unbelievably curvable, but it's for matroid theory, you see, so I'm not responsible. And this is just an intersection, which is not an empty intersection. The empty set is not allowed. We just don't pay attention. So for some subsets, you may actually get the empty set, and that means that you don't look at the intersection of those subsets. Well, here's the definition of an arrangement of topoplanes, and what it's saying is that if you take any flat and any hyperplane, then there's three possibilities. One is that their intersection is empty, and that's okay. And one is that the flat is contained in the hyperplane, and topoplane, I mean, and that's okay. And the third one is that the topoplane intersecting the subspace, the flat, has to be a relative topoplane. Now, if you go back and look at the definition, I didn't really mention anything about this, but the definition is telling you that your ambient space, which is X, is a topological open cell, or some say bull. If you're in the bull school, please don't complain. And the Y is also a topological open cell of the next lower dimension. So we're automatically in RZN, or what some people call RZN. RZN means many different things, and it will mean several different things during this talk. So in this case, it means an open ball, and so this is already very confining, actually. It means you're not working in arbitrary topological spaces. Well, that has to do with the range of validity of this Formula 1, which I worked out in 1977 in such generality that it didn't have any consequences. But when you specialize to a situation like what I was just telling you about, you will get that formula that you can actually interpret in some ways, or you hope so. Now, let's go back to some general definition here. The examples that I had in mind were, first of all, of course, hyperplanes, which come in two varieties, and then there's the affine pseudo-hyperplanes representing an oriented matroid. I have to explain that a little bit. The usual way of discussing the topological representation of an oriented matroid, and if you don't know this, just go to sleep and wake up in 2 minutes. The usual way is to talk in terms of pseudospheres, because it's a little easier to discuss the topology. But think of the pseudospheres, if you're familiar with this, as having antipodal map because they live in a big sphere, and then you collapse by the antipodal map, or antipodal map, and you will get the projective space. So they're really, these pseudospheres are really projective pseudohyperplanes. Well, when you take one of the pseudohyperplanes out of the whole picture, I'll actually mention this in a little bit more detail later. You take one of those out of this whole picture, you have affine pseudohyperplanes. Now, the purpose of this is that it basically gives you a representation of an oriented matroid in a topological open cell. And that's good because there's a theorem, which is Lasvernius's, about the number of regions that you would get in that situation, and the theorem is this theorem, which he got independently. But he didn't express it in the same way. So there are several ways to write this theorem, each has its virtues. But then we look at something that Alexanderson and Wetzel, who are sort of people who fool around with little things and come up with an idea, came up with as a nice idea. They observed that this whole hyperplane arrangement thing, in terms of counting faces, didn't actually depend on having hyperplanes in the whole space, but you could take a convex region and cut it up with hyperplanes, and it would work just as well. So we now have a considerable topological generalization of hyperplane arrangements in that way. So I was thinking of things like this, and I wanted to come up with some topological generalization, and that was 35 years ago, and 5 years ago, actually less than 5 years ago, we did come up with what seemed like a nice one, and that's this top-of-plane arrangement. Let me point out one, no means there's no theorem. That's not true. That's a different talk. There's actually no theorem. But in this talk, you see that what we're saying here is that we're going to have another intersection that has codimension one greater. And now from the matroid viewpoint, which is my viewpoint, a codimension is rank in the matroid. And what turns out is that when you adopt this definition, that, face is a region of, induced arrangement, some people call it restriction, but you can't do that in matroid theory. So here's the primary question. We've got this formula, and we don't know by just looking at it whether it's really new, in a sense that I'm going to explain a little more carefully. First, don't look at this last line because that's the answer, but the previous line is, you sort of say, well, maybe it's just a sort of rearrangement of Lasvernius's formula. So is it true that, in other words, you could take the pieces, this is the basic principle of the whole talk, the question that I was really trying to think about, and David and I got some answers to. And that is, can you take pieces of the different topoplanes and put them together into new topoplanes, making a new arrangement that has exactly the same faces? And if you can do that, and that new topoplane arrangement is, let's say, a pseudo-hyperplane arrangement, then you've just repeated Lasvernius's formula in a fancy way. That wasn't very obvious, but it is actually derived from Lasvernius's formula. So that's what we're wondering. And there's the answer. So the question is, why not, and what's going on, and how different are they really? And so that gave us room for lots of theorems, because we couldn't prove the theorem. The actual theorem that we were sort of hoping for was false. But that means that we could prove lots of different theorems. So I just wanted to give you a couple of pictures here where you take a look at this, these two ways that topoplanes can intersect. And here you already see something fishy. This is sort of the core fishiness, and that is that you can see they could cross, or they could just meet at that one point, that point is a codimension 2 flat, and then they could bounce off They don't cross. So if they don't cross, then they're not like pseudohyperplanes. So this is where we already certainly have some generalization, because if you have two pseudohyperplanes that intersect, it's part of the intrinsic properties of their topology that they will cross each other. And therefore, we are doing something. Actually, there's an example where they don't cross, and you get the same formula, but you can rearrange the pieces by just taking those four rays and rearranging them into two different topoplanes, which I guess those are topoplanes, and of course those are, maybe I better admit that they're not very plane, they're lines, topological lines, and you can rearrange them into real straight lines. So that's one of the things that we were hoping that would be more true. Well, okay, so I'm going to call them transective because it's like intersecting across, and if every intersecting pair of topoplanes crosses, and some of them don't have to cross or intersect at all, and if they don't intersect, that's like parallelism, so we certainly want to allow that. So, first of all, of course, an arrangement of affine pseudohyperplanes is transective. Everything crosses or doesn't intersect at all. So that's kind of, and we know that that can't be reduced to linear hyperplanes because, or affine hyperplanes. It can only be done topologically. That's by now classical stuff. So here's a kind of sketch of the idea of the classification of things that we were hoping perhaps would be perhaps not all that different from each other. And of course, at the bottom you have homogeneous hyperplanes, and then you have affine hyperplanes, and then affine hyperplanes intersected with a convex set. And a different thing, you can have the affine pseudohyperplanes, and you can sort of take the affine pseudohyperplanes, and you can't really intersect them with a convex set because it doesn't really mean anything in that context, but you do something like that, and you could get more weird things than you could by either one of them alone. So you can get a lot of weirdness going on, and then that would be restrictions of affine pseudohyperplanes is something that I can't define, and if somebody wants to think about what that means, it certainly could be productive. And then we have the transect. So all those guys are they're transective. They cross if they meet. And then let's just go to all transective topoplanes. Okay, now we're beginning to run into a problem. If I just took the definition of a topoplane arrangement, the regions are the components of the complement of the topoplanes, and I don't actually know that everyone is a cell. I know it has the right dimension. I don't know it as a cell. And so weird things could happen, and Laura Anderson and I were working on this, and we have some general idea of how maybe we could prove that sometimes it's cells or something like that, but we haven't had time to work on it. So we are about to get serious for the past year and a half, unfortunately. Well, one day. But anyway, I'm going to have to just put in a side assumption that all the regions are cells, and I believe that this is often removable, but not always. It could be removable in all higher dimensions, whatever that means. Then we go to general topoplane arrangements whose regions are all cells. So I would like to know, see the question mark? I'd like to know how different are these things from each other. So the idea I have of different is that you take apart the topoplanes into pieces and re-glue them. So we'll call this re-gluing. It sounds like high-powered physics, you see. It's really trendy. And so we will undoubtedly figure out what a gluon means. I haven't done that yet. So we're going to have these pieces that get glued together. So we'd like to know how can we glue them together. And so let's see if there's anything we can say at all. Re-gluing. Here we are with re-gluing, and that is the definition. That was the original question. And so in the plane, it turns out you can do it. And so actually what I say is that basically you can prove theorems in the plane that you can't prove in higher dimensions because you can draw nice pictures. Well, okay, so I just want to tell you this theorem. In other words, in two dimensions, you're okay. in higher dimensions, now this is getting interesting, because in higher dimensions, so what do we mean by a simple top of plane arrangement? Simple means that whenever a certain number of top of planes intersect and have a non-empty intersection, the codimension is equal to the number of top of planes. So anything different would be called a multiple intersection. And if there are no multiple intersections, that's what's called a simple arrangement. This is not going to surprise too many people. It works under those conditions. That's a surprising thing to me. Believe that, as you see, that we're always going to assume every region is a cell. So that's a kind of lurking question, but I'm just going to pass over it. And now, theorem 10 prime says that there actually are counterexamples. And I would love to show you the counterexample, but I don't have a graphics capability that could produce that while I'm away from my office, so I won't. But I will sort of. Let's take a look. It says proof by construction, proof by construction, proof. So let's take a look at what happens here. First of all, I guess a few elementary, we'll give proof by pictures. A few elementary properties. Take any flat, take the induced the induced family of top of planes, it'll give you an arrangement of top of planes. That's sort of obvious, actually, but it's good to know this. You need to know it. And now the whole thing is not a geometric lattice, partly because it need not have a top element, but every interval is a geometric lattice. And so you might start asking, what kinds of lattices, intersection semi-lattices, that is, can you get from this? Every interval has to be a geometric lattice. There must be some restrictions on this. But it's pretty broad, and I'm not at all convinced that there's a really good answer, but it's certainly something that might be thought about. Number three is just an example of the kinds of elementary property that we had to just write down in order to be able to prove things. And number four, of course, that's because you're only in the plane. There's not any room for things to work. It actually has to do with the Jordan-Kerf theorem and the Schoenflies theorem and stuff. So lemma four, actually you don't really have to pay a lot of attention to these lemmas, but they're just another thing to give you the flavor of the technical stuff that we prove in the course of proving some theorems. So we see lemma four is very simple, but you need to know this. And lemma six is they're not numbered consecutively, it's not you. So lemma six is it's like half a page to prove this, so it's not really that trivial. So this idea of crossing, if they cross, if two top of planes cross and then you take the induced arrangement in some flat, then they should still cross, and that would be a very nice thing, and that will work, but you have to be pretty careful about it because it's topology, so who knows what can happen. And here's the planar. This is the sort of the, I figured that as an example would prove everything, but actually it's leaving out a lot of the proof. Okay, so what do we do? So let's start out with the different kinds of lines being the original topo lines. So you see there's the single solid topo line, which just goes like so, and there's the double solid topo line, which is not so obviously like so, and there's the double dash topo line, which is actually a straight line, and the single dash topo line. So that's four topo lines, and some of them cross and some don't. So you know exactly what you want to do if you want everything to cross. You just pair up the halves according to being opposite sides of the intersection. That's a very simple thing. You know, the problem is you have to check things. So you do that, and then you check it. You notice, by the way, so that's labeled H1. That was the original topo line, but now K4 minus and K4 plus are the two that'll go together to make a completely transective pair. Now, this is just a local picture, so the problem is that you might mess things up somewhere else this way. So you basically have to check that you really have an arrangement of topo lines, and that takes a little checking. And then you actually have to make sure that you've reduced, because it's an induction proof, reduce the number of non-crossing intersections, which is actually pretty obvious. So that's not the hard part. So So then by induction, you've managed to prove it. And so we were happy to have worked out an actual proof at that point. And now here is it's not much of a picture, is it? This is a list of 5 topo planes in three-dimensional space that cannot be reglued. And I want to point out something about this. It has 2 one-dimensional flats. It has several one-dimensional flats. It has 2 one-dimensional flats that are not simple. There's a one-dimensional flat of codimension 2. So simple means it's the intersection of 2 topo planes, but these are the intersections of 3, and that means you have non-simple flats, and that's necessary by the theorem about simple arrangements. But I kind of wondered, is it possible to have a counterexample with only 1 non-simple flat? And I wouldn't be too surprised if it's not. It's sort of a borderline case, but I think there's a question there to be looked into by somebody that likes it. Well, basically, by looking at these 2 one-dimensional flats of triple intersection and trying to figure out how you'd put the pieces together into new topo planes that would be transective crossing, that is, you can't do it. And you sort of have to tinker around with it and look at the picture hard, and there's no picture. So that's the end of the proof. Okay, so now simple hyperplane arrangements. Topo plane arrangements, I mean. So there's the definition of simple, and I repeated the theorem, and here's the proof sketch. So you do the same thing, but the checking is harder. In fact, it's a rather longish proof compared to all the others, and there are several cases to look into, and you have to consider the ways in which a topo plane and a flat intersect, and you use all of the various lemmas and technicalities about it. And eventually you can wind up with taking care of every possible case, and then you conclude that in fact it works. And somehow there's no contradiction that is, you have to, you can, so let me explain this again in a moment. Okay, I resist the advertising slogan. So here the question is, you are going to do the same kind of regluing as you did in the plane. And what you have to check is that you don't mess up having a topo plane arrangement because it has certain conditions. And that you haven't increased somewhere else the number of non-crossings somehow. And this does take some work. So that was sort of the main theorem. Actually, I was pretty surprised at that theorem, to tell the truth, because it didn't look like it was going to work at all. But there was a theorem there. Now let's go on to these pseudo-hyperplanes, because that was the original hope, that somehow maybe we could sort of prove that actually the oriented matroid version was the complete answer. So how do we know not? Well, now, non-crossing is not a problem, because we can rearrange at crossings, you see. But we had an example where you couldn't rearrange at crossings. And that was the problem. So, of course, we have this easy lemma here, which I've already mentioned. Every pseudo-hyperplane arrangement has the crossing property for intersections. But it has more than that. So let's define parallelism in the obvious way as not intersecting. And now it's not an equivalence relation anymore in topo planes. Now, when you look at hyperplanes, of course, I don't have to tell you because you learned that a long time ago. And when you look at pseudo-hyperplane arrangements, parallelism is also an equivalence relation because they really exist at infinity. Topo planes don't exist at infinity. They could have horribly bad behavior at infinity. There's no restriction on that. So that's causing a problem, and that's the source of various problems. So we can't say that parallelism is an equivalence relation. Would it be possible, suppose we assume that parallelism is an equivalence relation, would this be regluable into a pseudo-hyperplane arrangement? I don't know. Oh, okay, there are unfortunately very many ways to do that. What I have here is examples where we can make parallelism not an equivalence relation very easily just by throwing together some things we already know. Basically, take any topo plane arrangement and take any other topo plane arrangement and put this one over here and that one over there and just leave a space in between them, and you have a larger topic plane arrangement, in which parallelism is almost certainly not an equivalence relation, because everything here is parallel to everything here, but they're not necessarily parallel to each other. I'm not going to show you that yet. Here's an example where you have something like what I just said, but it's a little worse. You see, the x1 equals minus 1 line, that's the first arrangement, and the double dotted line, dashed line, and the vertical x1 equals 1, that line, those two lines, are the other arrangement, which is over there, and they're not parallel, but they're both parallel to x1 equals minus 1. So that's obviously not from a pseudo-hyperplane arrangement. I threw in an extra line just to make it connected, because it would look better if it was topologically connected. So it's not hard to do that. You can always do that, obviously. Let's go back a bit and take a look at this theorem, because in the plane it works again. And that's a funny thing. So I've forgotten about regluing for the moment, by the way, intentionally. So here's how you prove that this projectivizable means that it comes from a pseudo-hyperplane arrangement, a projective arrangement, that is. And so what you've got here, so here are your solid lines, which are the topo lines, and they wiggle around like anything, but they are kind of restricted because they can't cross back. Once they cross, that's it. So it turns out that produces a nice pattern at a considerable distance from all the intersections, which is the circles. The circles are supposed to be at a considerable distance, and the inner circle is within the inner circle. I keep the original lines. I'm going to rearrange their pieces in some way so that they go off to infinity nicely. I'm trying to get rid of the bad behavior at infinity that is possible to exist. Now, what I'll do is that, like, this line here, so this one is parallel to, this is parallel to this one. L1 is parallel to L2. If you look closely, they will intersect. And that's parallel to L3 up there. So they're all parallel. So they ought to meet at infinity, right? If I'm going to projectivize this in a nice way, they have to meet at infinity. So you can sort of drag them, take the outer circle, and all the serious modification goes on between the two circles. You sort of drag the ends around between the two circles so that they line up near each other, and then shoot them off in parallel lines. And you can do this. That's the theorem. So you can always do that if you have the appropriate conditions, which are that parallelism has to be an equivalence relation, obviously, and they have to be crossing everywhere, or this can't possibly work, and that's all you need. But that doesn't work for three dimensions. And that's our problem. Does it work? Wait a minute. Does it work? Well, the truth is we're not actually sure, but it probably doesn't work. But we don't really know all the answers. There are a lot of open questions in this topic. And I think... So when I say here, by the way, in higher dimensions is intransitivity of parallelism, that's what makes it non-equivalence relation, of course. Is it the only obstruction to being projectivizable? In other words, basically equivalent to an arrangement of pseudo-hyperplanes? Well, I'm also assuming that it's transective, that every pair that intersects crosses. That's in the background of this question. Well, so we don't actually know this, but I think it's probably not true. Now, here's one reason for thinking it's not true, maybe. Or maybe for thinking it is true. I'm not even sure which way to think it. But this is the restriction to a domain. In other words, what you do is you take some nice domain. So it doesn't have to be convex because the lines wiggle around, so convexity isn't relevant. But some nice domain means an open subset. In other words, a cell, a topological open cell in R of the N, an N cell. So D will be the N cell. And you'll just take, actually, it shouldn't say components of, that's a bit of a mistake, but, or maybe it should, you know? Once you get to this generality, it should say that. So what we're assuming is that when you take your topo planes and you intersect them with this domain that a top of plane may fall into different pieces, but each piece is a top of plane in the domain. So it's okay to have more than one piece from one top of plane. And Alexander and Wetzel pioneered this with nice straight lines in convex arrangements in the American Mathematical Monthly. And so obviously, if you have crossing in the original, then you have crossing in the restricted arrangement. And however, parallelism could get very messed up. You see, that's sort of a canonical way to get rid of parallelism. So you say, okay, what if parallelism is not an equivalence relation? Maybe it means that you're not really in R to the N, you're really in a domain, and you should be working in extending the whole thing to R to the N. That your behavior is not R to the N behavior somehow, it's restricted behavior. Because restricting can mess up the parallelism property. Well, actually, Lesvrenus, it turned out, had proved that that was not true. You don't mess it up. In something he was doing for completely different reasons 10 years ago and didn't publish. And he thought he had a counterexample in higher dimensions as 3, but he didn't think it was really proved. And Jorge Ramirez Alfonsín said he would work on it, although I don't think he has yet. So we think there's a counterexample to this. That is, so you see, there are all these properties that we want to know, are they really different? Are they equivalent? Can you reduce one to another and so on? And we keep finding that in dimension 3 you can't, we can't tell, and in dimension 2 you can. And so there's the usual sort of 2-3 differentiation there. Well, there you are. I want to add to these open questions another one. But first, of course, can we get rid of, or how much can we get rid of, not entirely, but I think maybe usually you can get rid of the assumption that every region is a cell and just prove it, I hope. But that's something we're going to try to decide for sure. So here's an interesting thing. It seems to me, once you start having a lot of top of planes in a low dimension, and they intersect a lot, whatever that means, that they can't not cross unless they're really just completely hopeless, whatever that means. And I think that needs to be studied, because somehow a certain amount of crossing with lots of top of planes might imply everything crosses. And I'm sure this has something to do with lopsided sets, which is something Jim Lawrence introduced, and I just feel it must be, but I actually have no idea. So that's an interesting question. It has something to do with how you can take the coordinate arrangement in some n-dimensional space and re-glue the pieces into top of planes that don't entirely cross each other. And I suspect that it's probably pretty hard somehow, maybe. Anyway, that's question 2. And question 3 is complexify. But I have nothing to offer on that, except that it just calls out for complexification somehow. And one would certainly hope there is, and there are the papers, and that's our paper, which is going to appear 1 year. There will be a year which it appears, and the others, that's some very basic background. Well, thank you.
Are there any questions?
In a sense, the formula holds true if you have a topological space and a collection of subspaces, finite number of subspaces, and each subspace, the Euler characteristic should be, so the whole space should have the Euler characteristic of the ball. Open balls. And the subspaces should have the characteristic of the next lower ball, and the intersections should obey the rank formula, that is, they should drop by only one dimension at a time, and the regions should have the characteristic of a ball, and then you're done. That was in my 1977 paper. So the question is how to make sense of that in a way that has some geometrical interest. And so this looks like a way where you could prove something with these assumptions about topple planes. So that's why, say, an arrangement of topple planes is not just a finite collection of topple planes. It has to have some interaction restrictions in order to prove anything. Like getting rid of the assumption that the regions are balls. So it'd be nice to get rid of that. And I'm still hopeful for, say, a 97% solution. It means that every pair crosses or doesn't intersect at all. Every pair of topple planes in it.
So, I'm wondering about learning connections, or what context is possible to identify places.
Sorry?
In what generality is possible to identify the faces that, you know, assigned that?
Well, I see what you mean. I believe basically it's pretty clear that you do get sign vectors uniquely identifying the regions. That's something I didn't mention, but I don't know what to make of it. But it gives you a generalization of oriented matroids in that sense, in the topological sense. And the sign vectors would be would characterize the regions. What that means, that is if it's transective, of course.
But it
wouldn't have to be an oriented matroid because you could have problems like non-equivalence of parallelism. And, we don't really know a whole lot about classifying the interesting properties and what the interesting properties are, but certainly it's possible not to have a pseudo hyperplane arrangement and still have a nice sine vector characterization. Yeah, well, sure. I have no idea. But I was sitting in the first talk this morning, I said, wait a minute, I forgot to add that obvious question that belongs in this meeting, you see. So I raise it because here are people who can think about it.
Other questions?
No. Thank you.
So is every matroid realizable by topple plane?
No. I don't know that. But I basically don't. I don't think there's any chance. It's a good question, but I don't see how it's possible.
Like the dual pictures, you know, I think you can draw for rank 3 matroids, you know, you draw these things with the curvy lines. That's the dual picture, I know, but.
No, that is the picture.
Well, the points and lines. For me, I like the points are lines and the lines are points. But
yeah, that's right. But then that's the picture.
I'm just wondering if your theorem about the ungluability or regluability in the next dimension up tells me I can't draw those point and line pictures for all matroids anymore or something.
No, it wouldn't. It would tell you that there exists non-matroidal. I don't know, actually. You know, no, I don't think it's relevant. I don't think it's relevant. The example has a common intersection point, so the lattice is a geometric lattice. The counterexample.
Yeah, I'm not sure if I'm allowed just to take the cone of this picture to make sure there's a common intersection. It's probably not.
Sorry? No.
Cone print read.
Yeah.
Like I want to.